Hello, and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to break the taboos around death and dying and learn to talk about it. Thank you if you've been listening since the beginning, and if you have, you'll know we've covered so many aspects of death and dying, from what it's actually like to die, to how it feels to lose your nearest and dearest, the different ways grief can strike, the different ways we cope or don't with loss, how counselling can help, what part faith can play, how to help others going through grief, and how to pick up the pieces and rebuild a life after a big loss. So I'm joined today by Catherine Beer, and this time we're going to talk about grief and the senses, because I'm not sure that anyone really knows until they've been bereaved quite how all the senses get involved in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to begin, if that's all right with you, Catherine, with music and sound, because I think that's one of the most powerful.
I would agree. I think music touches us right to the core.
And that's why music at funerals and memorial services is so important, I guess. Absolutely. And families spend a lot of time trying to choose the right music, don't they?
They do. And I think it's vital, because music stirs up so much in us, doesn't it? Stirs up emotion, stirs up memories, actually, and stirs up comfort as well for us when we hear music, whether that's music with word, whether that's classical. Some people can find soft, gentle music very comforting. Some people can find more raucous music quite comforting as well. It just depends on what it evokes in us, doesn't it?
And then there's the music that you shared, maybe.
The music that you...
Shared?
Yes, 100%, because you know, when you hear a song that was poignant to you with the person who's not there anymore, you're instantly transported back to one of the times that you may have heard it, whether it was... I don't know, the song from the wedding. Songs that were around at poignant moments, songs maybe that you just remember enjoying listening together and sharing a laugh over, or tears. Music maybe that were there when you were having your children or sharing childhood times with your loved one. And I think, you know, music at a funeral is crucial to the bereaved people. They really, really, really want to get it right.
But there's also the aspect of music being moving in itself, isn't there?
Very much so.
You can find yourself totally overwhelmed by emotion, listening to something that may actually not have had anything to do with the person you've lost, but yeah, is just a moving piece of music in itself.
Absolutely. And often words of a song that may, as you say, may not have been anything that you listened to with somebody, but the words of a song. Ed Sheeran in particular has written some very powerful songs over recent years, hasn't he? And Supermarket Flowers is one that people will often talk about. Not that it was one they listened to, but because it is so poignant about the death of somebody, and people will often say, we had Supermarket Flowers at Mum's funeral or Nan's funeral. So I think you're right. It's songs where the words can reach you, and often express how you feel, but it can take a song written by a talented songwriter to bring those emotions out of you.
And they don't have to be words, because no. I can be moved by some pieces of classical music, mm-hmm, which meant absolutely nothing to Michael, but mm-hmm, move me still. It puts you back in touch with your feelings. That's what it's doing, isn't it?
It does. It does. And sometimes it helps us release our feelings when we're not quite sure how to. And people will often say to me, again, on the First Steps bereavement group that we run here, oh, I was, you know, in the car the other day, absolutely fine. The day was perfectly normal. and a piece of music or a song came on the radio, and I had to pull over because I suddenly was engulfed in a wave of tears. What's all that about, they would say? Why has that happened? It wasn't anything that reminded me of my loved one. But it's as you're saying, isn't it, Dilys, that the music can just reach right inside and touch our emotions, bring them out of us. And that's not a bad thing, because our day may be normal, our day may be standard, we may just be driving to the supermarket as normal, but when we're grieving, that grieving never stops. And there will be days when there are triggers, and that's perfectly normal. And music is one of those things, one of our senses that will be a trigger.
And while we're on the subject of sound, there's also the person's voice, isn't there? Now, Sir Ken Dodd's widow in the first episode, or the second episode of this series, described how she was really upset when she found she'd wiped a message from him on the answer phone. And I think people can relate to that, because it's very nice to have that voice around you at home, but not everybody has it.
No. And I think that is actually one of the things people say to me here is, I don't want to forget their voice. I don't want to ever forget what their voice sounds like. And so what if they say that to us while we're still caring for their loved one, we will try and encourage them to get some recordings or get their loved one to, I don't know, read a story into the phone or however they want to record it, to hold on to that, because I think hearing someone's voice is such a real vivid connection to that person and can bring such comfort. Sometimes people find it quite painful to listen to, but you've got it for the days when you do find it comforting and do feel that connection. It's really important.
There's a lesson in there, isn't there, which is try and record people while they're alive, as you just said.
Very much so.
But again, it's not something we're going to go around thinking about in everyday life, are we? Oh, I must record so-and-so because I want to remember their voice. And I know we do make videos and things all the time now, but we need to be thinking perhaps about preserving them somehow, don't we?
Very much so. I think, you know, the more we can do to get memories of people. I mean, I'm a, you know, my girls will often laugh at how often I take photographs on my phone. You know, oh, I just want to get a photo of this. But it's important because, you know, they're lovely to look back on when everyone is around and alive and well and stuff. But actually, you know, to look back at photographs of your loved one is, again, a vital connection. And if you can double that up with videos, footage, sound recordings of their voice, then it helps to keep them alive.
Well, you brought us neatly onto sight, so let's continue with that. Mm-hmm. I know some people fill their homes, don't they, with photographs of somebody who's died. Mm-hmm. Other people aren't so keen on doing that.
Yeah, and we hear that often in our bereavement group, actually. And it's interesting. We have one of our sessions is bringing a photograph along of your loved one and talking about them and sharing memories. And when was that photo taken? What was it about that photo that made you bring it? Quite often people will bring the order of service from the funeral, because quite often your favourite photo is used on that. And it's becoming more prevalent now, isn't it, to include more photos within that order of service, which is lovely. And it's so nice to be able to talk to people about loved ones and look at their photographs. But some people do say that order of service is in a drawer, because seeing a photograph of them is too painful. As you say, other people will say, I've got a photo by my bed, and I say goodnight to them, and I kiss them, and when I wake up in the morning, I say good morning, I go down the stairs, there's one at the bottom of the stairs, in the living room next to my armchair, there's a photo next to my armchair, because everyone's an individual, and I think that makes us realise how individual our grief is, and again, how there's no right or wrong.
I guess if you're not surrounded by photos, or if you don't have very many, then the occasional glimpse of one might be quite distressing.
Yes, and that's again something that people will say, you know, I don't have many photos up. When I go to my son's house, it's full and I have to catch myself. So it's getting that sort of balance, isn't it? And trying to work out what is and isn't helpful can be really difficult. Some people said they started off surrounded by photos, and as time moved forwards, they thought, oh gosh, it's actually not helping. I'm going to put them all away. So they then put them all away. And then learning, actually, I feel a little bit easier within my grief at the moment. I'm going to get one out and see how that makes me feel. Again, there's no right or wrong. It's individual.
So let's come on to touch now. Mm. And that makes me think of clearing out. Mm. I suppose it makes me think of clothes in particular. Mm. There are certain clothes I haven't wanted to get rid of yet. Mm. And I do like to touch them from time to time. Mm. But then there's also the aspect of not having a person to touch. Mm. And that's a big loss when you lose somebody. It's a big area of your life that's gone.
Yeah. And clothing, pillow from the bed, dressing gown, all sorts of things. Again, are direct connections. And often the clothing, this sort of links in with one of the other senses, doesn't it, with smell. Clothing will still smell of that person. And that is, I think smell can be very overwhelming, because as soon as you breathe in the scent, you're like, God, that's quite an overwhelming trigger, isn't it? And again, this is something we talk about with people on the group. Often I will find that people will say, I've got the dressing gown hanging on the back of the door, and I don't think I will ever stop having that. That's okay. People will often say, I sleep on their side of the bed because then I feel close to them. That's okay too. I know that my mum has had eiderdowns, very old-fashioned word, made up of lots of my dad's shirts and t-shirts, cut them all up. I've got a tote bag with lots of squares on it that were his shirts that I remember him wearing. And that, again, is a very real way of keeping that person in that room in with you. Clearing belongings, clearing clothes is we could probably do a podcast on things like that, couldn't we? It's a lot of people say to me, it's one of the hardest things, practical things that they find they face following the death of somebody, because those are things that belonged to that person. I take it back to my own experience. I helped my mum clear my dad's clothes. We did it quite early, because he had this most funny story in the family. He had this most amazing, very old-fashioned duffel coat, and he loved it. And my mum very clearly said, I don't want that going to a charity shop near where we live, understandable. But equally, it's getting to the winter. Someone could make use of that. So we cleared all his clothes, and my mum doesn't live locally, so I drove up, cleared them all out. I said, I'll take them to a charity shop near home, put them all into the car, drove away, and had to stop because I felt like I had him in boot. It was really hard, actually, and I hadn't quite realised how difficult that would be. After a few minutes, I was fine, and, I went. But I think things like that are quite difficult, but you don't have to clear things out if you don't want to. I think that's really important that people know, it might take years, because they're real connections, aren't they?
And if there's a lovely fluffy jumper or something that's nice to touch, it might be nice to keep it around and keep touching it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, that's where the touch sense is so important, because it's, you know, especially when you say fluffy, that, you know, anything that you can just sort of almost, it's regulating, isn't it, on our emotions to touch something, blankets, jumpers, dressing gown. And I know here at the hospice, we have something called blanket therapy, where amazing supporters of ours out in the community have knitted blankets, crocheted blankets for us to use. And the initiative started off where we would give a parent who was our patient a blanket to use while they were here. And when the time came where the patient died and didn't need that blanket anymore, it was given to the child or children. So they would have one each if there was more than one child. And that was done in a way that the child would have a real physical connection. They would remember mum or dad using that blanket while they were here in the hospice. And we would encourage the parent to maybe spray the perfume or aftershave or wash it in the laundry liquid that the children would recognise, and use that. And we have so many beautiful blankets now. We're really fortunate. We've just opened that up, really. We use that for any patient where there's a family member who might benefit, so might be an older person. And we have used them also where there is a pet that's significant to the patient, and where the particularly with the dog, where the dog will miss the person. And again, that really goes in with touch. And I know that a little girl whose mum I was supporting while she was here, they came back to see me after her mum had died. Her dad brought her in, and she said, "I use mummy's blanket and I wrap myself up in mummy's love."
Oh, what a lovely
idea. I know, and I use that phrase quite a lot when I'm talking about blanket therapy, but it goes along with how touch is so vital for us in grieving.
And then the touch that I mentioned earlier on, when you physically have nobody to touch any longer. I mean, that's hard. So when you're used to holding hands, maybe, or having hugs or whatever. Yeah. It's a big lack.
It's a huge, huge aspect of the grief, isn't it? That feels as if, will that ever ease? And I think, you know, people have said that having something to hold, the pillow or the dressing gown or a jumper, blanket, helps with that. It won't take it away, will it? Because that can't be taken away, that absence. But it can ease.
I'm getting a heart-sinking feeling talking about this, because I suppose it's bearing in on me that I don't have a thing like that to touch.
Yeah.
It is a big loss.
It is. It's a big hole, isn't it? And that sort of, when you equate, I suppose what I'm trying to say is, when you have a visual reason, you know that person isn't there anymore because they're not. But actually, when you're lying in the bed, maybe, and there is, the absence's huge, isn't it?
And you'd be surprised how many times that scene appears in films or television programmes. When somebody's died, they will very often put a picture of the single person lying in the bed reaching out.
Yes.
It gets me every time.
I'm sure.
So, we haven't done taste yet. You've touched on smell.
Mm-hmm.
But let's do a bit more about smell then, because things like washing powder and so on, that intrigues me, but it's so true, isn't it? Some families, you can smell them coming.
Yes. I think it's the laundry liquid and the softener, isn't it? There are softeners that I think, oh gosh, I can smell that, and that's what so-and-so uses. But equally, it just is a reminder to us, isn't it, that, again, smell takes us right back. Perfume, aftershave for a man, you're instantly, you know, when you're walking around and you smell that, you think, oh, you expect you're going to see that person, don't you?
But not just perfume and aftershave, things like whiskey.
Yep.
Marmalade.
Yes.
Things around the house that are just everyday things that can suddenly pop you right back there.
Mm. Bacon grilling is one for me, yeah. instantly you expect to see that person, don't you?
And taste. Well, I've mentioned marmalade and whiskey, yes. haven't I? But yes, I don't know that I've been triggered really by any taste, but I best guess a lot of people can be. Meals they've shared, things
yes.
like that.
Yeah. I think that taste is definitely a trigger for people. But like you, that's not something that's a trigger for me. I think the only thing I can sort of put it with is, and you mentioned the marmalade, when you see a food that you would have shared with that person, that's, so again, I think it's this, you know, seeing things. So marmalade for you, for me and my brothers, we always get the giggles about Toblerone. Dad was a massive Toblerone fan and used to have one every Christmas. So we will often buy Toblerone and then put a photo of it on our family WhatsApp, you know, dad, his dad, for dad. But it's not necessarily the taste of the Toblerone. It's the seeing it, isn't it? Maybe for others, it would be cups of tea or, you know, but it's incredible. I think this is just shows us, doesn't it? Just, this is what's striking me as we're talking about all of this, is that each of our senses plays a huge part in our grieving and in our processing of our grieving, doesn't it?
And you can't be sure what's going to pop up and hit you next, can you?
No.
Because of all the senses, and different things will occur at different times.
Mm.
And you might not have expected something. I mean, like marmalade, particularly in my case, because it's never been something I've been particularly keen on, but I would keep it in the house for Michael. And I'm sure if I opened a pot now, it would just take me straight back to him.
Yeah, it would be overwhelming, wouldn't it? And that would be, could be a mixture of, that would be the sight maybe, the scent, the smell. So I think it's all our senses rolled into one for quite a lot of things, isn't it?
And Toblerone I have in common with you, funnily okay. enough, because that was Michael's favourite. He used to always to get it for Christmas, and I always used to say no thank you because I had my own supply of chocolate. But now I've taken to eating Toblerone.
Indeed.
And I guess it almost feels like I'm doing it in as a memorial to him. I love it. I'm not saying I don't like it. I enjoy it very much. But it's almost like I'm honouring him in the eating of it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why we do it as well. And I know that every year on my dad's birthday, I'll have a bacon sandwich and a cup of tea because that's what he and I used to share. So for me, the smell of bacon cooking is just like instantly transporting. And so that's, again, you know, a way of honouring him, bacon sandwich and a cup of tea. And that's, you know, that's part of your grieving, it's part of your navigation. You're navigating, constantly navigating through this different way of living and navigating your way through all the emotions that pop up, which they do, as we've said already, haven't we, just now, that you can be having a normal day and suddenly something will pop up and steer you off course a little bit.
And that's never going to change, presumably.
No, I don't think it changes. I think it gets easier and I think you learn to live with it. You learn to live with that different way of living. You learn to live with the navigation. And I think you will always miss your special person or people. And there will always be events and occasions in life after their death that you just wish they were there. And I don't think it matters how long after that death is. That sense of, wouldn't it have been lovely if they'd seen that? Wouldn't it have been lovely? But that's okay, because that's normal and that's natural. Again, it comes back to that saying, grief is the price we pay for love. And I think, you know, we are who we are, not just because of us as individuals, but because of that person who isn't present in our lives anymore. They've been part of shaping us and moulding us, whether they were a partner, a parent, sibling, child, friend, any relative, they've been in your life. And so therefore, the grief that you show is because you loved them and they loved you, and you're validating them through carrying on and navigating through life.
Catherine, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dilys.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.